Today on episode 0 of the Old School PC Podcast, it's our pilot episode. What is an old school PC and why should there be a podcast about them? Also on today's show, Q&A. We pull an obscure game out of the basement and we introduce the PC Jukebox. You don't need to be a vintage computer nerd to enjoy vintage computers, so stick around. Welcome to the Old School PC Podcast, a show that explores the first decade of personal computing and gaming with the IBM PC and other DOS compatibles of that era. Whether you're a retro computing enthusiast, vintage hardware or software collector, or just want to learn more about the birth of modern computing, we've got you covered. We start every show answering questions from the audience. Now, that may seem a little strange given that this is our pilot episode, but I wanted the pilot episode to have the same structure as the rest of the episode, so I asked some friends to help me out before it went live, and I have questions. So today's question is from Jeremy Williams, who writes, "My first computer was the IBM PC Junior, and you could probably devote a whole segment to discussing its innovations. I'd like your opinion on why it wasn't more successful." He's absolutely right that I could devote an entire segment to the PC Junior. In fact, I plan on doing several segments on the PC Junior throughout the life of this podcast. It was one of my favorite systems of that era, and I've done a lot of research about it. And what I'm not going to do is parrot the same reasons that other people reproduce when they talk about the PC Junior. Yes, it was not as PC compatible as they claimed. Yes, the keyboard was crap. Yes, the wireless didn't work so well. And these are the reasons that are usually trotted out. But honestly, I think the real reason the PC Junior failed is because of price. I think it priced itself outside of its target market. So what does that mean? The target market that the PC Junior was trying to enter was the affordable home computer for the new computer user. They were very, very clear on that in terms of their marketing. They were directly going head-to-head with the Commodore 64, the Apple II, the Atari 8-bit series. And so, it was designed to be connected to your living room television, and you were supposed to operate it from the couch. I can't think of anything more family computing positive than that. And the problem with their approach in that in making it PC compatible, they had to follow certain design restrictions, and that kept the price at a particular baseline. So the Commodore 64 with a disk drive, you could get for roughly, let's say, $600. These are not exact numbers. I don't have Wikipedia in front of me, but just for the sake of argument, roughly $600. And it was, I think, even cheaper for the Atari 8-bit line. The PC Junior in the equivalent configuration with a disk drive was over twice that amount, $1,300. When you added a monitor, it was close to $2,000. That is way too much money for the average home consumer who just wanted to get into this whole personal computing boom and see what was going on. And IBM realized, after they weren't selling like hotcakes, that price was likely an issue, and they reduced the price to $999. But by then, it was kind of too late, and they never really got it down to the level where it was competing. Now, I think some conspiracy theorists say, well, IBM kept the price down on purpose because they didn't want to compete with the big guys, the IBM PC 5150 or the PC XT. And it's true that those sold originally for $4,000. And if you could purchase a machine for your home that could run at the same programs and be, one-third to one-fourth of the cost, yeah, I can see that. But it wasn't the same market, and I don't think that there's any weight to that. I don't think IBM directly, intentionally limited the price. I mean, if they could have reduced it to the point where it was actually selling and not a failure, I'm sure that they would have. But PC compatibles simply cost a certain baseline amount. They couldn't get under it, and it just didn't sell. So that's my personal opinion. Now it's time for the main topic of the Old School PC Podcast. And the main topic for our pilot episode is appropriately, what is an old school PC and why should there be a podcast about it? So I've always been fascinated with PCs in general. It's not necessarily because I grew up with them, but also because I find it very interesting that nobody seems to have any sort of love or nostalgia for very old PCs like they do for other systems. There are podcasts dedicated to the Atari 8-bit line, like Antic, and there are others that cover a whole range of 8-bit systems, like Floppy Days. And there are also DOS gaming podcasts like DOS Nostalgia, but that tends to cover things that were like 1990 and later. There's a whole decade missing in the podcast universe, and I felt that I had the interest and the qualifications to talk about it, and so I'm going to do it. And I'm going to try to make this as interesting for everybody as possible. Now, I can't promise to make it interesting for people who don't think the PC is interesting, but I do have a structure in mind and a set list of topics that I'd like to cover. So what are we going to cover on the podcast? The main crux of the podcast is going to be the main topic, which is actually what we're in now. And it's not going to be just history. You can get that online. I'm going to try to cover real useful information on obtaining and restoring and enjoying vintage PCs. And you don't necessarily need real hardware to do that. I'll cover emulators at some point. But getting the PCs, yes, they're between 35 and 25 years old, but they're surprisingly easy to obtain and restore, and you can make them do some very interesting things. They're fun to tinker with. So actual vintage retro computing will be a large part of this. But I'm also going to do some fairly deep dives into areas of the IBM PC and compatibles that I find interesting. Games, obviously, the main focus of most retro computing these days. Let's not kid ourselves, it's gaming. And I'm also going to go into some other topics that are slightly off the beaten path. I have a long history with trying to produce sound on old PCs, both with and without a sound card. I'd like to talk a lot about the early days when there were no sound cards and how you got decent sound out of a speaker. And I'd like to cover some interesting and offbeat trivia, maybe some obscure uses of the system. I promise it will never be boring. And I also promise that it's not going to be just a rehash of stuff that's on Wikipedia, because that's lazy and that's crap. Anybody can go to Wikipedia and read what's there. And there's necessarily no guarantee that what's there is accurate, but you can do it. I lived through that period. I also continue to use and restore these systems and write new software for them even today. As of this recording, it's 2016. So I feel like I am qualified to give you the perspective of someone who not only lived through that era, but understands the hardware and software at a low level, and hopefully I can make it interesting for you. Now, of course, we're going to cover games. Games are fun. Games are interesting. But there's a lot of podcasts that, when they do choose to cover the PC, and there's certainly a lot of YouTube channels that cover this too, they tend to start, they cover only the greatest hits. LucasArts Adventures, Sierra Quest Adventures, Infocom Games, I think those have been covered to death. There's a lot of really interesting stuff that has been released for the first decade of PC gaming, and I am going to cover it. Now, you may want to fasten your seatbelts. Occasionally, the podcast will get technical. If you don't like that, then you can just skip to the next section. But if I know a lot about a particular area, I'm going to dive into it, because it's fun to talk about, and it's fun to learn how the PC did things differently from other systems of the era. Now, I also will occasionally be dedicating an episode to nostalgia. I really didn't want to do this. I ran away from it, actually. I felt like there are a lot of podcasts that just simply talk about what, you know, for example, my life as a teenager was. And that's nice for maybe once or twice, but after a while, it becomes an echo chamber. And it's just you and a couple of guys talking about what you did as teenagers, and I really didn't want to cover any of that. To my surprise, when I was researching what I wanted to do for the podcast, I sent out a survey, and the survey came back overwhelmingly in favor of people who didn't necessarily want to learn about some of the topics I was going to cover, but they wanted to learn about me, which is a little crazy. I'm still wrapping my head around it. But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought my personal experiences can somehow maybe inject a different story or a different personality into this information. So by popular demand, every eighth episode will be a nostalgia episode. I'll cover, what I did as a teenager, my personal experiences, but I'll also cover other things too. For example, I've been a longtime member of the demo scene. I've competed at some parties. I've even won a major party recently. I'd be very happy to talk about that. And just other various bits and pieces. So I will go into that every eighth episode because I was there and I'm old. Small side note, I'm also starting up a YouTube channel. And I will mention details on how to connect to that at the end of this particular episode. If you like video, then you'll like the channel. Anything that I feel needs to be covered a little bit more in depth that I can't fit into the podcast, anything visual, for example, gameplay footage or an unboxing or something like that, I will put on the YouTube channel. So that will be related topics after the release of every podcast. So I hope you will check that out as well. It'll be a little less edited and less produced than this, but, you know, if I spent an entire week producing a 5-minute video, then nobody would be happy. Now, what will you not find on this podcast? Hopefully, you won't find boredom. Each episode is going to cover at least 4 completely different things. A question from the audience, a main topic of interest. I'm going to pull a game out of my basement and cover it, as I mentioned earlier, and it's not going to be a game likely that you've heard of. And finally, I'm also going to dedicate a small section to producing sound and music on PCs. I've worked with that a lot. I find it very fascinating. And if you couldn't care less about sound on old PCs, then it's at the end of the show and you can skip it and everybody's cool. But hopefully I can clue you into a couple of things that you've never heard before. For example, I have a couple of rare sound cards that sound very different than the stuff you've heard, so maybe we can go down that journey together. So hopefully no boredom. Each episode is going to cover all these things, and I pledge it will never be longer than half an hour. I don't like my time being wasted. I don't want to waste yours. And I'm, quite frankly, I'm very surprised that there are a lot of podcasts that go well over 2 hours long. I can't listen to that. I can't listen to it into a single setting. And it's very difficult for me to stop it and pick it up later. The Square Waves FM podcast, and this is not a comment on their quality or topics. I think those are great guys, and I think they cover some very fascinating things. But their podcasts are never shorter than 3 hours long. That's crazy. I can't do that. And the Retro Gaming Roundup is another one that has great content in it, but there was an episode in late 2015 that was 6 hours long. That's a marathon. So I'm not going to do that. Every episode, 30 minutes or less, twice a month, maybe more frequent. Hopefully you'll find that great. You will also not find any scripts on this podcast. Outlines, obviously. In fact, I'm looking at one right now as I record it, but not scripts because I understand if people aren't comfortable speaking in front of a microphone, but I just can't handle the cadence of something that is read off a script. No matter how natural you try to make it sound, it just doesn't sound natural. You probably noticed when I was reading from a script at the top of the podcast, and it just makes me cringe. So yes, there may be some editing mistakes. There might be some ums and ahs. I apologize in advance. I will do my best to edit them out, but I really feel like unscripted is better. You get more of my personality through the podcast if it's unscripted. And finally, as much as people have asked me, I will not be covering any news, at least not a lot. There are a lot of podcasts that do a great job of covering, recent retro computing and homebrew news. The biggest one is the Retro Computing Roundtable. I think that's required listening for anyone who's into any vintage computing. The guys do a great job, and everything is always very topical. Antic also does a pretty good job of covering news, and I think I mentioned before Floppy Days. That's also a wonderful podcast that also covers news. So they're already doing it great. And if you already listen to those, I'm not going to rehash what I would be learning from them anyway. So no news. So that's it. Four main sections, less than 30 minutes. Your crazy host, Jim Leonard. And I hope that you'll tune in. As mentioned earlier, in my generation, retrocomputing interest is largely motivated by gaming. Sad to say, but it is. So each episode, we pull an obscure game out of my basement and we cover what makes it interesting or unique or historically relevant. And this episode, we're looking at ZIL. Now I'm going to spell that in case you haven't heard it. ZIL is Z-Y-L-L. This is a game that came out in the mid-80s, published by IBM for the IBM PC and the PC Junior. And it is incredibly hard to classify. It is, at simultaneously, get ready for this, an adventure game, a text adventure game with real-time RPG elements, and two-player simultaneous split screen where the two players can also be cooperative or competitive. If that sounded confusing, that's because it was, but that is, in fact, what ZIL is. You start every game with a random objective. The objective is simply that you have to gather various pieces and retrieve them. What makes it interesting is that it is structured like a text adventure with two windows on each side for each player. You can play it single player, but it's on each, you know, there are two windows on each side for each player. One player handles their actions all through a set of function keys, and the other player handles all their actions through the numeric keypad. That's at least on a PC. On a PC Junior, it's a little bit more complex, but it still works. And you just simply go through the world giving north, south, east, west commands and attack commands and spell commands and lighting a lantern, everything that you would do in a normal text adventure, but you're doing it with the function keys. And playing with a second player, first of all, having a real-time text adventure is bizarre. The Digital Antiquarian, who is a wonderful, wonderful essayist on the history of computer gaming, covered a couple of real-time text adventures, one of which that I can think of is something called Breakers. So if you wanted to look up Breakers on the Digital Antiquarian's website, you can get more information. But essentially, a real-time text adventure is just that. If you sit there at the prompt and don't type anything, eventually something will print out, something will happen. If you're playing with two players and the other player wanders into the room you're in, it will say, other player has entered, or something like that. It's fascinating to watch, and it's also fascinating to play with a second person. I love the fact that it's not only cooperative, but competitive, and I set this game up on a lark for my teenage son and one of his friends to play, and putting it on competitive mode was a lot more fun because they're sitting there yelling at each other. There's while they're hitting function keys madly to try to kill each other. Now there's a set delay between each action, so you can't just, you know, you can't just spam the key and kill the guy, but very fascinating to watch. ZIL is readily available in various collections, and I will put a link to download it in the show notes. It runs on any PC, pretty much any PC with 64K, so no matter what you have, it's going to run just fine. The cracked version that I will link to is a DOS executable. The original game was a booter, so there was no DOS. The original game, you put in the disk, turned on the machine, it booted, and you ran the game. But the cracked version I will link to in the show notes is fully compatible with DOSBox or any other emulator or system you want to run it on, so have at it. We close each episode of the Old School PC Podcast with the PC Jukebox, which is a selection of music generated by real PCs. Sometimes this means sound cards, and other times it's just the PC speaker, but it's always recorded from real hardware, no emulators. And this week's selection comes from MIG-29 Fulcrum. This is a game published by Domark in 1991, and the music is by Julian Myers. And the reason I picked it for today's episode is because it was the piece of music I heard that prompted me to start thinking about, wouldn't it be cool if there was an old school PC podcast that also featured some music? I know that seems very non sequitur, but what struck me about this particular piece is that it was composed for Adlib. A lot of music for the PC was composed on MIDI, and it was translated to the Adlib, usually just through an instrument mapping or something like that. But this particular piece of music was composed on and for the Adlib. You can definitely tell there are some instrument choices and other compositional choices that meant it was not some sort of automatic conversion. I think it sounds great. I'll stop talking. Here is the title music from MiG-29 Fulcrum. And that is it for this pilot episode of the Old School PC Podcast. Hey, did you know we love to hear from you? If you have questions or topic suggestions for the show, email us at podcast@oldschool.org. You can also find us across social media as The Old School PC, including YouTube, where we post additional videos throughout the month on early PCs, gaming, and related topics. And remember, we spell old school with a K, as in O-L-D-S-K-O-O-L. If you'd like to support this podcast, as well as the other work I do in this field, consider becoming a patron of the show on Patreon. All donations go toward making the podcast and YouTube channel better, such as improving my production equipment or rescuing obscure software. Patrons can also directly steer the course of the show by voting on which topics I cover next. Visit patreon.com/theoldschoolpc to learn more. The Old School PC is produced by Jim Leonard, with incidental music by Ken Snyder. For more information on Ken's music, visit coda.s3m.us. And thank you for listening.